This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
A very good afternoon and welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing a wide range of sports with you right here on a Monday afternoon. We're going to start out talking recruiting with our very good friend, and we've been doing this a long time. Tom Leming joins us, and we're going to talk on the recruiting trails. We'll talk about the spring game a little bit later on, and we'll also talk about the Lions draft later on today's show. But first off, let's bring in Tom Leming and talk some of the recruiting trails. Tom, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay, Earl. How about yourself?
Hey, doing good. And, yeah, I want to talk to you. As I told you before with the last time we talked, it's recruiting has changed somewhat because, you know, they used it in either, and we hardly paid any attention to what they were doing as far as juniors. And I remember one of the first shows we did, I think Penn State was one of the first shows that has aggressively recruited a lot of juniors. How has that changed your work? Because now everybody's recruiting juniors.
Yeah, it did. Penn State started around 1993 when they lost the year before Ron Polis to Notre Dame and nine of the top 10 players in the state of Pennsylvania. So the next year they started offering the juniors early, figuring they're going to get a jump on it. Obviously, with a major power like Penn State doing that, then the other schools had to follow suit or take a chance on losing those players. And now it's come to where things are done a year in advance. For the players that are juniors now that are going to be seniors, if they don't have scholarship offers by July 1st, chances are great they're not going to have any scholarship offers. It gives you an idea how things have really moved up. So ball players have to be aware of the recruiting process. I would imagine talk to your coach or people in the know. Go to as many camps as you can as freshmen and sophomores, because by the time you're a junior, the time's running out.
Yes, because that's the thing. If you have to have one by juniors, I know we used to talk about how a player could change from their junior year and the senior year. But so what, that's being ignored now? Because everybody's, if you have, you must have a very good junior year to get recruited, don't you?
Junior year is more important than a senior year nowadays.
Wow.
Because you're right. By July 1st, after all the June camps are done, most of the scholarship offers are out. Now, they'll offer a guy who has a great senior year, but chances are really good that there aren't many of those guys that can get that many offers because the colleges are finished with their some schools by September 1st are just about done with their recruiting at most positions. So ball players have to be very much aware of it and get the bulk of the recruiting done as sophomores and during the junior season.
Boy, this has really changed recruiting a lot. I mean, you really have to be on the ball on that person's junior year. And because the thing with some kids, as we know, some kids might just totally lose interest in football, say, the heck with this, I don't want to continue to do this anymore. But most of them, I guess that almost locks them in to playing football, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, it's become more of a specified sport anyway. All the sports are. Back in the old days when I played high school ball, I played baseball, football, basketball. Nowadays, they're more specialized. There's still ball players playing other sports. But now, because it is a specialized business, ball players are working. Instead of playing basketball, they're lifting weights. Instead of running track, they're going to school visits. So they've become more specialized, and they're zeroing in on one sport. And basketball is the same way, and I think football has become that way where recruiting is so important now. Marketing has become part of the recruiting process for the ball players. Either their parents or their coach will get out there and market them and make sure that they have any kind of a shot. If they're borderline players, the Division I schools are going to know about them. The major talents, the top 200 players nationally, they don't have to market themselves. People will find them. The rest of the ball players, I think it's good to get out there and get that publicity.
What about, another thing that's changed, we used to hardly hear at all of kids going to school, not going to their high school senior year, going early to college, going in for that spring game so they can get that early start and recruiting. It seems like there's a lot more of that now, more kids going, finishing up early and then going on and getting started in college early. How has that changed? Has that gone along a lot more than what it used to?
I think a lot of the college coaches from the past 10 years have talked to the high school players about being midterm grads so they could get a jump, particularly quarterbacks get a jump on the offensive system who want to play early. These are ball players that want to play as freshmen, figuring that they get that extra few months practice that the other members of their own class will not get, and figure they can get a jump on the other player. I would say for the most of the time, it doesn't really work that well. Every now and then, you'll see a ball player that will start as a freshman, so it works for him. A lot of the other ball players, they're missing their rest of their high school experience, prom and graduation and everything else. So I don't know if it's worth it. I guess for some players, it is to get that jump on the rest of the class.
Yes, because they can get their start. Some of them, yes, they may not start, but, it might get them into being the two deep or the three deep, some ways like that. So would it help that way? At least they'll be recognized, and the coaches will know who they are.
Well, if you're a two deep or three deep, I don't think it's worth it, because that means you're giving up your fifth year. I'd say come in. If you really want to play 4 years, come in and redshirt your first year. Get yourself acclimated to academics, athletics, and socially. And then you have those 4 years to play with. When you come in the midterm, you're coming in younger. And if you're not going to start, why even come in? I mean, you got that experience, but you can get it later on down the line, and I think it would benefit you even more.
Do a lot of the kids, it seems like, Tom, maybe are looking more, looking more for the NFL and thinking that, hey, if I can just make it good and stay 3 years, I can go on and move on to the NFL after 3 years.
Hey, Earl, that hasn't changed. They've always been looking towards the NFL. They've all had an eye towards the NFL. There aren't that many that can actually declare for the NFL draft and actually get drafted. There's only 7 rounds, and we've got 3,000 ball players signing Division I scholarships every year. So, and maybe, 20 to 30 that are of them that'll be able to leave as a junior and get it drafted high.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's worth it. I mean, it's always good to have that dream in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
But I think it's more important to get that education and make sure you're set academically. Football will take care of itself.
Yeah. So what has that done to you, Tom? How has that changed the way you do things? Does it change your evaluation or anything? Does it hurt you in doing your job?
Well, right now I'm driving between Sacramento and Redding, California, doing interviews. I just interviewed one of the top defensive linemen in Auburn, California this morning. So I moved things up. I'm actually done in 2 weeks with my whole national travels. Before, 10 years ago, I finished at the end of July, and then about 5 years ago, I finished at the end of June. Now I'm finishing early May, mainly because that's what the people want. So my magazine will be out during the middle of the summer instead of at the end of the summer. And I'll have all my information. I'll personally interview the top 2,000 players before May 1st now. And I'll be able to start writing the magazine and getting everything ready for my TV show.
Yes, and you're doing more, I guess, more detailed work on the juniors these days?
Yeah, while I'm going, I had a lot of the top players meet me at UCLA Saturday, about 106 players. 40 of them were players that are only going to be sophomores or juniors. So I am working on a lot of the underclassmen, a lot more so than I did 5 years ago, because I think the fans demand it. And actually, that's what the college coaches themselves are doing. They're working on underclassmen, trying to develop relationships with the ones they've already identified as potential prospects. So I've got to kind of do the same and, keep up to date with top prospects and really the junior and senior classes to be.
Yeah, and I know that's had to help colleges have to move up all of their recruiting timetables. For example, so a school like Michigan State, what does that do for them? Does that help them more, or does that hurt them more?
You know what? I think I don't think it does any either way. I think it may hurt the the powers that have had the tradition, like a Michigan, Ohio State, or Notre Dame, because that means they've got to jump earlier. I think when Michigan State, who is also a big-name school, it may help them a little bit more because they have more time to maybe evaluate some of the other players that are still out there after the others. Like Michigan's more than halfway done in their recruiting, and they may have, even though as much time you spend evaluating, you're still going to miss some players. Michigan State's got a great reputation of evaluating and then developing their players. Coach D'Antonio does a great job at that. And I think in the long run, it might even help Michigan State that the other schools are jumping on guys much earlier than they have in the past. And it'll give these schools, the great evaluating schools, a little bit more time to go after other players.
So, boy, it's really changed a lot over these last few years. Well, since we've been doing this show for so long, Tom, it's really changed a lot, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, sure. Hey, well, everything's changed. I started in the late 70s. I didn't have a cell phone, didn't have a computer, didn't have credit cards. I had to make my phone calls from pay phone booths like Superman used to do, because that's when the only way you could reach high school coaches. Say if I'm traveling to Mississippi, I had to go into a phone booth and pray that the coach was going to pick up the phone. I had called him earlier and then make sure he's going to be there the time he said he would be. And I have to interview a lot of players that way back then. And things have changed. And I had to use 16-millimeter film to watch. Now then you had VHS and DVDs, and it's a lot easier now.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, now, for people that want to get your magazine and everything, can you give me some numbers or how they can look it up to see that, everybody's got a computer now?
I think, yeah, you can go on maxpreps.com or CBSSportsNetwork.com or NCSA.com. They all advertise the magazine this summer.
Okay, so there's a lot of ways. So you can get maxprep.com, NCSA.com, and... So there's a lot of ways you can keep up. And your magazine, I mean, boy, you've really grown over the years, haven't you? I mean, at first you were just doing radio, and now you're doing radio, television, in the magazine. So you expanded your whole operation, haven't you?
Yeah, when I started out, it was a 12-page newsletter, 6 pages stapled together back in 1979. Now it's a 300-page magazine, and I probably do over 200 radio shows a year, and I'm in over 400 newspapers, and I've done books and movies and stuff like that. So it kind of works out pretty good from the way I've come a long way in 33 years.
Yes, I remember. I think we started it in 79. I don't know if I was your first interviewer. I was one of the first near the top, because I know we started back there in 79 and 80.
Yeah, you were certainly one of the guys that helped me out, put me on the radio back then, because that's how I actually got my subscribers back in the old days. I didn't have a lot of money. I had to travel around the country, sleep in my car every other day to save money. And I'd stop by radio stations. I know in Detroit, WJR, and your station in East Lansing, and Jack Brickhouse in Chicago, Bob Trumpy in Cincinnati, and work my way around the country that way and selling my magazine.
Well, it's been a great relationship, Tom. I know I've enjoyed knowing you, and our fans have enjoyed listening to you and appreciating what the information you give them. And I know we'll have you back on later on, and of course we'll talk about the upcoming recruits and the recruiting, and we'll do that probably back during in the summer or near fall, and we'll start talking about the next recruiting class.
Well, I'll look forward to it, Earl. Anytime. You take care. Have a good week.
Okay, you too, Tom. Talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. Wow. And that's Tom Lemming talking sports with us, talking recruiting with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Tom Lemming, as he said, just look at maxprep.com. You can get the numbers if you need the numbers, or just look up his information on there. That's one, maxprep.com or ncsa.com. There are a couple of sites you can just look up and find out more information on Tom Lemming. Basically, still the number one recruiting expert and analyst in America. He does a great, great job with recruiting. The time, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
Supreme Court justices seem inclined to uphold parts of the controversial immigration law Arizona passed 2 years ago. Since then, Georgia, Utah, Alabama, and other states followed suit. So what's changed for immigrants, for business, and law enforcement since these laws hit the books? I'm Neil Conan, the effects of anti-immigration legislation. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon. Showers are likely, possibly a thunderstorm, a high near 59. Scattered showers tonight, a low in the upper 30s. Partly sunny Tuesday with a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms, a high in the mid-70s. And a good chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a high in the 80s. I'm Kevin Lavery.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. or toll free 877-952-7870, or send us an email at sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, next up, we're going to talk about the Michigan State spring game, which happened on Saturday, with Adam Ruff from Spartan Sports Network. And we're going to talk with him and look at how the spring game went and look at a lot of things and just do a lot of analyzing on the whole spring game and what it meant for Michigan State. We didn't get to see the starting quarterback, Andrew Maxwell. But, you know, we saw Connor Cook. We saw several receivers. But the main receivers that we'll see next year didn't get a chance to play. They had slight injuries. There are a few guys that just got slight injuries. But we'll talk about that and all the things that happened in the spring game with Adam Ruff from Spartan Sports Network. Adam, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Earl, how are you doing?
Hey, doing good. And, yeah, just wondering about that spring game. You know, we didn't really get a chance to see that much, so how do you evaluate the spring game? I mean, we know the defense, it looks like they're going to be pretty good, but the offense, we didn't see the quarterback, didn't see a lot of the receivers, some of the receivers we saw. So how do you evaluate the spring game?
I don't really know how you ever really can truly evaluate it, Earl. I mean, when you consider what you just mentioned with Maxwell out, then you add in the other injuries like Tony Lippitt and Darqueus Dennard and Lawrence Thomas and on and on and on. And then you add in the fact that, you know, a lot of these guys aren't playing next to the same guys are going to be playing next to on game day.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I mean, you know, you see some individuals that stand out to you a little bit. But, again, it's really difficult to judge. I mean, one of the things I noticed, I was keeping stats for George Blaha on our spring broadcast the other day. One thing I noticed were all the pass breakups. I mean, there were only five, but four of them came from the defensive backs, I should say. But how do I read that, you know?
Yeah.
Is that the quarterback's fault because he's inexperienced? Or is that just how good the defensive line is, getting their hands up and blocking? I mean, there's a whole bunch of these things that are just kind of hard to really place what they mean. And so I think you really got to keep everything with a grain of salt and just look for maybe individuals that maybe break out a little bit. And I think that's the way you really got to judge it and judge on how much you like the spring game based on injuries.
Yes, because when you look at the spring game from some of those angles, just like with Connor Cook, I mean, he hit some receivers he didn't hit, so he was a hit and miss guy. So that made it hard to evaluate the receivers because they did have some drops as well. So it really was pretty hard to evaluate the whole recruiting corps, wasn't it?
Oh, I mean, most definitely. I mean, that was one of the things that you really don't know about is the passing game. You have all these new receivers, and obviously you're playing with a quarterback that you weren't expecting to play on both sides the whole game and feature exclusively. I mean, like you mentioned, he threw some quality passes, like the one that Johnny Adams caught.
Yes.
A 45-yard pass play on the near sideline. It was a very beautifully thrown ball. He's got good arm strength. But again, his timing isn't there, and his accuracy isn't there on a lot of throws. But again, you know, like we just talked about, what do you chalk that up to? The fact that he's a young guy, which he is, and that's true. Or do you chalk that up to the fact that we've got a bunch of new wide receivers and there's no chemistry and timing, and timing's very important in offense, especially between quarterbacks and receivers. So, I mean, it's really tough to judge all of it.
Yep. Well, we got a question for you already. We've got Todd calling you. So, Todd, what's your question for Adam?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Three quick ones. First of all, there's been talk among some of the Big Ten coaches about bringing in another team to scrimmage for the spring game. I've heard some of the other coaches' opinions, but have you had a chance to either ask Coach D'Antonio or hear his opinion on it? Number one, a player that really stood out for me the other day was Marcus Rush, a kid who had a very good redshirt freshman year, kind of faded down a little bit, but you know, that was probably being worn down and stuff, but I thought he played exceptionally well last year, and then in the spring game really stood out. And then finally, when do you expect there to be an announcement of the captains? I know a lot of people don't get into that stuff. I guess I'm kind of geeky that I do care about that. When do you think they will be announced? And are you willing to throw out a couple names that you think might be there. Thanks a lot. If you could hit those three questions, I really appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, go for it, Adam.
Well, Earl, I've learned, so I actually wrote down his questions so I wouldn't forget them all. Let's start at the top, another team scrimmage. I haven't really heard a whole lot about that, Earl. I know I haven't asked Coach D'Antonio. I know, you know, he mentioned maybe I'd love to go here or go there. You know, it doesn't matter with me. I think he's a proponent of it.
Yeah, he's an opponent. I know he'd like to do that. He'd like to see another team. But I'm not so sure if the Big Ten will ever supervise or if college football will ever supervise it.
I mean, yeah. We got to remember these teams are in the NCAA.
Yes.
The NCAA has 1,000,001 rules, and so there's no way to really maybe even get to be able to do that because of all the restrictions there are at certain times of the year, and, you know, you deal with injuries.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, as a commissioner, you probably don't want to pit your teams against each other necessarily and risk one of your marquee guys getting injured like a William Golson. You wouldn't want to see that at all as a commissioner of your conference because then there's maybe a little less interest when the season comes around. So, I mean, coaches may be in favor of it because you get a little more truer sense of where your team is. But, with the NCAA and maybe the risk factor involved, who knows? I mean, it would be a lot more exciting for fans. You'd see a lot more than, about 15,000 that were there the other day, Earl?
Exactly. It would be more exciting for fans, and they probably wouldn't mind plopping down a little bit more cash for it. I mean, if you had a spring game against a team that you considered a good team, you know, I would say I don't think it ever happened, Adam. But for those who think it will happen or it could happen, you got all those aspects of bringing in your team. If you have to travel, then that means you have to take 110 players somewhere. And are you going to be able to get everybody in? You have those aspects as well. When you have to travel with everybody because you don't want to have a spring game where only 30 or 40 players play just like it's a regular season game. So that wouldn't help you. So you're gonna have to play everybody and travel everybody so I think it's probably a little bit too hard to do.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, when you factor in maybe the cost to do it as well, there's so many factors in it, and then you just get into all the extra junk with the NCAA that I mentioned. So I don't see it happening anytime real soon.
Yeah, me neither.
Unless teams, you know, with their power super conferences end up breaking away from the NCAA. It's really hard to envision, but I don't know. It would be more fun. I would enjoy it more. But, to answer Todd's other questions, captains, we don't know who the captains are going to be, and they don't pick them until very late in fall practice.
Right.
But usually,
before the first game, they'll announce who the captains are.
Right. Well, I know we do a fall preview the Monday before the first football game of the year. And we have a segment where we talk with the captains, and we find out about it, you know, a couple days before. So, that's going to be later on in the process. And, Earl, I would have to think Max Bull is going to be a captain.
Yep.
He defensively, I might even say a guy like Kyler Ellsworth could be one. I know a lot of guys on that team really like him. And Earl, you were at the spring draft, and right after they picked Max Bull, who was the next linebacker picked? It was Kyler Ellsworth.
Right. Yes, right.
And it was kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But those guys know what's up with their teammates, and they picked them. So I think he might be a dark horse you could look at on the defense that could be a captain. Maybe Rashad White. I don't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily seem like the captain type, but I don't know him like his teammates do. I think Andrew Maxwell's probably going to be a captain.
Right. Coach D'Antonio mentioned saying a Fo Finuti could be a captain. He spoke very highly of him.
He did. He spoke very highly of him, man. And you can't leave out a guy like Larry Caper either. I think he's got a very good head on his shoulders. And in spite of the fact that he's, you know, kind of been swept under the rug the past couple of years with the other guys that have been running the football, especially Le'Veon Bell. And then you see how well Nick Hill does. And you wonder what's going to happen with Larry Caper. I think he'll factor in. But as far as a captain goes, I think he could be one. And I think there's a lot of guys you could choose from. That would work admirably, but I would think the main two is going to be Maxwell
and Bulla. But to answer Todd's last question, Marcus Rush, he's a beast.
Yeah.
He just is. And when and since he's opposite of William Golston, that only helps him that much more. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you've got Golston on one side, everybody's going to be keen on him,
yeah.
especially if you leave a running back in to help and pass protect. Well, guess what? That's just going to help out Marcus Rush. He's very fast, and he's very strong. I mean, he had three TFLs in the game on Saturday, had 2.5 sacks. I mean, he's one of those high-motor guys that has a nose for the football. And I think he's going to get a lot more play this year in terms of, you know, the media hyping him up, including, you know, regional and maybe even national, thanks to William Golston and how much attention he's going to command. So Marcus Rush, another great player for Michigan State for sure.
I'm wondering, too, how did you evaluate Tyler Hoover? Because, you know, he's got to move into to Darrell Worthy's spot, and he's got to shorten his stride and everything. He's got a lot of things to do. But how do you evaluate him at this point?
Well, I think he played pretty well. And the thing that would maybe worry me about him being inside initially is his height.
Yeah.
He's so big, and it's so key, as you know, Earl, to get leverage.
Yes, it is.
On the inside, especially with linemen, they're very protective of their knees. And so being a taller guy, maybe there could be a little worry about that. But I thought he played pretty well. He got some good push at different times. And obviously he's got some speed that he's acquired from working on the end. And we've seen him play well on the end, namely against Notre Dame. A couple years ago, played very well, and he's athletic. So I think you could see him in there. The thing I wonder about, though, and not just about Tyler Hoover, but what's going to happen inside, is Lawrence Thomas, when he gets healthy, is he going to be in there? He's 280 pounds now, and you've seen him, Earl. He's a freak.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to, you know, be on the wrong side of that guy. And the thing is, we make that assumption or we think that just based on having seen him in person. It's not like we've really ever seen him play.
Yeah.
Unless you saw him in high school. So I think that's going to be interesting. But I think Tyler Hoover can really do some things. And like I mentioned with the pass breakups, getting hands on balls, he's going to be another guy that in the middle of that is going to be able to get his hands up. He was very adept doing that from the end position. And so I think there's some things that Hoover can do that can be very valuable from the inside.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting watching this team, how the guys develop and how they man their positions, because it is going to be very challenging for them. And I'm just wondering still, overall, how does this affect with Worthy and some of the two or three guys that are moving, and how this affects overall the defensive line? We're assuming, everyone is assuming, that the defensive line and everything is going to work very well. But, you know, there still is. You got new guys in there, so this is going to be certain changes, and it could be good, you know, but I'm still not sure at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you'd like to think that the Darrell Worthy inside last year really helped Marcus Rush and really helped William Golston. But they do a lot of things individually very well. Now, Darrell Worthy also last year, he jumped off sides about a trillion times. And we saw Rashad White do that in the game as well, in the spring game, which I think is a little troubling when you see that. But one thing that Darrell didn't get a lot of credit for was his intelligence. He was very good at reading the opposing snap count and getting his fellow linemen on the same plane as he was. He was very good vocally down there in the trenches with his guys, and he was a very good leader for them. So I think that's going to be interesting. I liked Kittredge down there, the transfer. You know, I thought he played really pretty well at different times. James Kittredge from Vanderbilt. I mean, there's some different things that these guys can do. But who's going to step up? And I think, Earl, we've seen, and I think this is where I get my confidence, is that people that Mark D'Antonio recruit,
yes,
there's going to be somebody out of that mix that's going to be a guy we didn't expect.
Yes,
and so
true.
Who's that going to be? And it's hard not to trust D'Antonio and what he's doing with Pat Narduzzi at this point. I mean, you just have to, because he's proven, and you saw six guys get drafted last weekend. He's proven what he's been able to do with guys, even the lesser recruits. So while you wonder I think we're going to see one or two guys really step up. Even saw Makadre Reynolds get a 1.5 tackles for loss on Saturday. So you really don't know what's going to happen in there, but I think they'll be okay as long as somebody else is in there to really kind of do what Jarrell did instinctually for the rest of the line with his intelligence and reading the snap counts.
One thing I think we can speak very confidently about is that offensive line. It looks like the offensive line is going to be outstanding this year.
Yeah, and you know, they've got that old word depth. It's amazing how things can change from one year to the next. I mean, it's not like these guys are suddenly veterans, necessarily. Travis Jackson, I mean, he's not really a veteran yet. Do you say that? I don't know. Is Treadwell? No, not really. But you have so much more confidence, and these guys have worked. And again, you see D'Antonio's recruiting depth. These guys have talent. These guys have ability. You see a guy like Henry Conway, maybe he's going to even fit in the mix. Jack Allen could be there. Skylar Berkeland's going to get back in the mix. And like you mentioned, Fofanoti's already been spoken of pretty glowingly by Coach D'Antonio this spring, a lot in maybe his leadership aspect. But that leadership goes a long ways to what you can do on the field as well, physically. And so I just think there's a lot of positives from that. And I think if there's a year maybe where Le'Veon Bell can really break out and become the true workhorse on the team, even though he's not going to, be the bell cow like Javon Ringer was, because, they have Larry Caper and Nick Hill. I think you're going to see more of that. And the offensive line maybe most notably will help Andrew Maxwell. You have to think. Give him time and maybe give him confidence, because we saw last year Kirk Cousins' confidence drop, and he was rushing a lot of things early on this season because he knew it was just a matter of time before somebody was going to smack him because of the offensive line. So I think that's going to be very valuable for the whole team's success. You know, the defense is going to be good. How good will the offensive line really turn out to be? I think that's going to predicate a lot of Michigan State's success.
Well, one guy we're all cheering for and cheering a lot for is Arthur Ray. I mean, he gave him a little bit of a how he's going to evaluate him, but, it won't be settled probably till sometime in the fall, but hopefully Arthur Ray can make it to the field consistently for the first time in his career.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that just be incredible? I mean, This guy had his what's the lower part of your leg? He had that taken out and had a cement spacer placed in there.
Yeah.
I mean, how ridiculous is that? And then the fact that this kid can build up his muscle around the bone when the cancer is cleared out and surgically placed back in there, and he's got the courage and the willpower to do this. I it's hard to say how much he's going to play. It was interesting, Someone asked, I think Joe Rexroad asked D'Antonio in the post game about Arthur Ray, and D'Antonio said he would have to work for it, and he acted like he wasn't quite in the top 10 of offensive linemen.
Right.
But it's kind of hard to get a read from that standpoint because D'Antonio didn't gush over him. Obviously, he's going to point out what a great kid he is and how hard he's worked. But he didn't, gush over it. And, of course, he wants to watch film and whatnot. But it would be great if we could see him. I mean, because that's one heck of a story. And again, that's something that can help bond a team together, too.
Yes, it could.
When you have a guy like that in there and a guy who's competing day in and day out. I mean, if I'm an offensive lineman, Earl, and I see a guy who came back from cancer, your legs are your base. They're the most important thing. He had his leg taken out and placed back in, and he's had to work. If he can do it, you're darn right I'm going to be able to do it, Earl. You're darn right I'm going to be able to work harder because look at what he's done. That motivates me.
Yeah,
I don't play football. It motivates me. It motivates a lot of other people out there. So I think that can be a very good thing, not just for him, but for this team. And I hope we can see him out on the field more and not just, maybe in a blowout against Eastern Michigan.
Yep. Well, Adam, hopefully we'll be back in the fall talking more about Michigan State sports. That first game, August 31st against Boise State, it should be an interesting game. Both teams have lost a lot of guys, the starters from last year, so it should be a very interesting game, that first game. I know Boise State has lost more starters than what Michigan State has, so it should make it a very interesting, and it should be a very entertaining game.
Yeah, that game and the rest of them are all, I think this Michigan State defense is the real deal, and I think they're going to really be the force that Michigan State needs. If you overlook them, get ready to face their defense, because they are big, fast, and mean, and they have waves and waves of guys that are ready to come at you. And that Boise State matchup, as you mentioned, Earl, every year they're kind of like Gonzaga in the fact that they take on anyone who wants to play them, because they want a chance at the national championship game, and every year they win their non-conference, their big non-conference games. So, they may have lost, 15 or 16 guys, starters from last year, whatever it is, but they've got plenty of guys. They're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder come Friday night, August 31st at Spartan Stadium.
That's for sure. Hey, Adam, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll be back talking more, probably about as we get closer to to fall practice. We'll be back talking more about more football with you about then. About that time.
I can't wait, as you know, Earl. It's always the best time of the year.
Okie dokie. Hey, we'll talk to you later, Adam.
All right, see you, Earl.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Adam Ruff talking sports, talking spring football with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 41 minutes after the hour for 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
For many, jazz is living music. For others, it's an academic art form or even history. For pianist and composer Jason Moran,
it's about being really simple and being really complicated.
I'm Neil Conan, the Kennedy Center's newly appointed artistic advisor for jazz. Jason Moran joins us on International Jazz Day. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
For the rest of the afternoon, we can expect cloudy skies. Showers are likely, possibly a thunderstorm, a high of 59 degrees. Then for tonight, scattered showers, a low in the upper 30s. Partly sunny skies on Tuesday, a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms, a high in the mid-70s, and a good chance for showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday, with a high in the 80s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-957-8770. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call or send us an email. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. But more importantly, we need you to spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Well, now we're going to try to get a hold of our good friend Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press and talk about the Detroit Lions draft over the weekend. The Lions, by some people's thoughts, did a pretty good job. Some people think, they didn't do as good a job. Some people think that getting Ryan Broyles in the second round was not a good choice. They could have selected someone else. Some people think it was it could be a good choice, especially if he gets over the injury that he had. So there are a lot of speculation there, but they did address the cornerback situation. They did address the defensive, the linebacker situation, and they definitely got a first-round draft pick that can help them in the offensive line, Riley Reiff from Iowa. So there's a lot of positives about the draft, and then there are a lot of a lot of question marks about it too. So hopefully Dave Burkett can straighten out some of the things and some of the question marks that we had about the this past draft that the Lions had. So we're going to try to get hold of Burkett if we can and talk with him right here on AM 870 WKAR. But you can always spread the word around. Let everyone know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. Want to tell you, in case you missed the fight on Saturday night, of course, Seth Mitchell, former Michigan State linebacker, fought a very good fight Saturday night against Chaz Witherspoon. He knocked him out in the third round, and he was in just three rounds. He was severely tested. He was tested quite a bit, and so Seth Mitchell is moving up, and he may get a shot in a Klitschko next year or so. So we'll have to check on that and analyze that, and if he gets a shot at one of the Klitschkos. But he fought a very good fight, the first time he was ever really tested in a fight. And he was tested, and he was rocked somewhat in that first round. And as he told me when I talked with him this morning, is that, he was tested. He was really shook. He was shaken in somewhat in that first round. And he survived it and was able to come back and knock out Witherspoon. Witherspoon. He landed some very good body shots on Chaz Witherspoon. That was the key for him, was landing those body shots. I asked him about Witherspoon was able to connect with him. He was throwing those overhand rights, and how that affected him. He says a lot of it was because he was bending too much in the waist. If he hadn't been bending so much, he would have hit his gloves, but he was bending in the waist, and that made him able to come over the top. So he says he just has to make some slight adjustments to him, and he should be okay in the next fight or two. But he says that was challenging for him, but he was very pleased at the way he rallied and knocked out Witherspoon, and that was a very good test for him. You know, every fighter, if you know anything about a fight game, a fighter has to be tested sometime down the line. You know, and in the heavyweight division, you're going to get hit. I mean, you got all the big men in the heavyweight division are fighting, and so you're going to get tested. You're going to get hit and hit hard and rocked by someone. You know, in the smaller divisions, you might face somebody who doesn't hit that hard. So, that won't hurt you as much. But if you're a heavyweight, you're facing another big guy. You aren't going to face too many big guys who don't have any kind of power. So he fought someone that had some good power and who almost knocked him out. Let's face it, it almost was a knockout. And he was very pleased with how he came back. Matter of fact, we'll talk with Seth Mitchell on Wednesday, and we'll talk with him on Wednesday about his fight against Chad Witherspoon. And we'll also ask him what about the plans for the future. There is some talk he might fight one of the Klitschko's in a year from now. He might get that chance. Supposedly one of the Klitschko's, or both the Klitschko's, want to come over and fight in the United States. They haven't done that in a while, so they may want to come back here. And if they do want to come here, it would be natural that they want to match him up against an American heavyweight. So if he can keep winning, Seth Mitchell could be in line for a championship fight, that's for sure. So we get a chance to see that possibly him, Seth Mitchell, in a championship fight. But that would be good for Seth Mitchell, that's for sure. Because if you're a heavyweight and you get a heavyweight fight, there's a lot of money involved at the top of the heavyweight chain. That would make, that would be a very good fight and a very good payday for a heavyweight fighting a heavyweight championship fight. So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. I know many of you watched some of the basketball games last night, and there were some very good basketball games, some of the playoff games. You saw the Los Angeles Clippers came back and beat the Memphis Grizzlies 99-98. They were down 27 points at one time, and yet they were able to come back and win the game. And that was a fantastic comeback for the Clippers. They were trailing by 21 points at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and they came back somehow and won that game. L.A. able to knock off the Denver Nuggets. The Lakers were able to win their game. Philadelphia's already lost. The New York Knicks are looking line up that series at 1-1 if they can win tonight. So that'll be one for them. So there's a lot of intrigue in the early part, in the early rounds of the National Basketball League, that's for sure. And so you can just go ahead and watch some of those games and watch some of those games tonight. And yeah, Miami is going against New York tonight. Indianapolis is going against Orlando. That's who, or Indiana. Indiana's got to try to even up that series against Orlando. And Oklahoma City going for a second victory over Dallas tonight. So those are some games. Of course, you've got the New York Rangers going against Washington, and St. Louis going against the Dodgers. I mean, excuse me, Los Angeles. So, and just looking at over all the games and all the draft picks by the teams, and there was one pick that might have jumped some people. John Adams, who was the offensive lineman out of Green Bay, and they got him, and he was a good lineman, and hopefully he wasn't with the Green Bay bet, but he was with another team, and Adams. So it's going to be interesting to see how all these guys play, and some of them were drafted very highly and were high draft choices. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes out. And so let me ask you, Jacob, what did you think of the draft? What was your impressions of the draft?
It was a good draft. For the Lions particularly, I mean, they filled a lot of the holes they needed to fill. We talked about them needing to find some cornerbacks. They were able to draft three of those. You know, they did have that interesting pick, and when I actually saw the pick with Broyles in the second round at wide receiver, because it's something we had talked about, I believe on Wednesday, maybe it was Friday. I think it was Friday, how we'd be surprised if they picked a wide receiver, and, you know, then they go in the second round and they pick him. But, you know, it is a situation where, you know, if it's a good player out there, a player that can contribute down the road or right now, even if it's a position you aren't necessarily, really scarce in, you might as well go ahead and draft him. So that was a good pickup. Overall, I thought it was a really a good draft for the Lions. It's not what I would classify as, for lack of a better term, a sexy draft. So they didn't get a lot of the big names. They didn't get all these guys. They filled holes they needed to fill, and they picked up players they needed to get. And it was more of a utility draft than it was kind of a headline draft.
Yeah, one guy I debated with thought that they shouldn't have picked the receiver Broyles in the second round. They said they could have got him later on, and it was his opinion that they could have got him in the third or fourth round, since he's coming off an ACL injury, that he would have been available maybe the third or fourth rounder. And he just got back and ran a 40 time after the combine. He was able to just run a 40 time. So they think that the guy can be, he'll be okay, and he'll be able to get ready and do something for him. So that's special for him. I mean, if it turns out he's healthy and he can come forward, he can be very helpful for them. Right now, let's go talk with Jim from DeBitt. Jim, how you doing?
Doing good. Real quick, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and still a Washington Redskins fan, so I'm quite excited that they drafted Kirk Cousins.
Yes, they did. They got him with the second, with their fourth round pick. So it looks like he's going to be the backup, because they cut their other quarterback, which was Beck, I believe Joe Beck or John Beck, who was a second string. It was a part time starter last year. They cut him, so it looks like Kirk Cousins can move in to that second spot. But now here's the problem: if Kirk Cousins, they say they're bringing him, they want competition. If Kirk Cousins is a competing for the job, for the starting job, that means that RG3 maybe is not as good as they evaluated, and then they made all those trades to move up to get him. So, you know, what does that say if Cousins is really becoming a legitimate prospect, is the number one job for a starter in Washington? That's the thing that we're going to have to look at and see, you know, is the RG3 really that good as he's been billed to be, or they hope that he's going to be that good? Or is Cousin just better than what he's been evaluated at?
Well, that's true. Well, just like all the other draftees, you know, we're just going to wait and see how it all plays out and how they do.
That's true. We'll have to wait and see, because, there are a lot of good picks. And, I mean, the best thing we can say about Kirk, he's getting a shot. He's going to get a shot to play and maybe even be a starter, or some, whether it's the first year or the second year. Or, you know, if RG3, hopefully he doesn't get hurt. But if he gets hurt, you know, he might get a shot to be a starter. So, yeah, we'll just have to wait and see, won't we?
Yeah, that's true. Also, great show today, Earl, and it's certainly encouraging about the Spartan football team. Sounds like they're going to have a little bit better offensive line.
Yeah, it does. The offensive line should be outstanding this year. They've got at least 9 players right now that are involved and could be starters. They'll be mixing and matching, but they've got the players that can certainly help out and be a starter on the offensive line.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thanks, Earl. Have a marvelous rest Monday.
Hey, you too, Jim. Hey, thanks a lot, buddy. Yep.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye now.
Okay. Yes, Jim, talking about that offensive line. That offensive line should be outstanding. Jacob, that should be an outstanding line for Michigan State. You know, we still don't know about the receivers, of course, and we don't know about the quarterback yet, but at least we know they're going to have a very good offensive line and should have a very good running game coming up this year.
Yeah, it's really important they have a good offensive line this year, too, because the quarterback position is somewhat of a question. I mean, Andrew Maxwell, you know, should be a good quarterback. We did obviously see him in the spring game. But if he goes down, you know, that position isn't very deep and it gets a little worrisome. So it's really helpful to have a lot of time to throw the ball. I mean, when you're a young quarterback and an inexperienced quarterback, there's a few things that'll rattle you, and a couple of linebackers and big defensive players barreling down towards you certainly is going to be one of those things. So it's really nice to have an experienced, good offensive line. Yeah, the offense, you know, in the spring game, you know, everyone expects the defense to be solid this year. I don't think anyone really sees that as a problem. They expect it to be a really good, creative defense. But the offense is a bit of a question in a couple of areas, with wide receiver, with quarterback, a couple of those positions. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, when you have a good defense, though, that certainly takes a lot of the pressure off of the offense. But, you know, we'll see. A lot of question marks there on the offensive side of the ball.
Yes, it is, and yes, we'll like to say we'll have to wait and see how they do. I mean, especially if the other team is doing a lot of blitzing, how well does Andrew Maxwell handle picking up blitzes? Can he pick up blitzes well? Does he know other offenses good enough to see where basically have a pre-snap read of where a blitz might come from? So that's going to be a big challenge for him, is trying to pick up blitzes, picking up the lines. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be a lot more challenging for him trying to learn everything he needs to do during the summer as they get ready for a fall practice in that first game at the end of August.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. That's certainly going to be something he's got to watch out for. It's not only being, you know, it's not only recognizing a blitz is coming, but it's understanding, you know, it's kind of processing that and then figure out what to do. What do you do with the ball at that point? So it'll be interesting to see how the offense plays out. That's kind of the one, you know, question mark. The good news is, you know, this is the Big Ten. You don't expect high scoring games. You know, it's not a really high powered offensive league. So it's not, you know, it's an issue, but it's not, you know, the end of the world. They have a really good defense, probably one of the best in the conference. So, you know, they should have another successful season.
Yes, I know. One thing that surprised me, a little bit didn't really surprise me, but they said one thing that Kirk Cousins was so good at the pre-snap reads. I mean, he had three plays he could call for when he went up under center at the first play. So, you know, if he liked the first call that the offensive coordinator came, he would run that. But if he didn't, he would have a pass play. He might have another running play. And after you, with the defense always, you know, able to jump around at the pre-snap read, you know, you have to choose what are you going to call? You're going to call a pass? You're going to call a run? What kind of a run or what kind of a pass? So that's why they give you three options to run a play at the beginning. So it'll be challenging to see how good Maxwell, if they give him three plays, which one he chooses, and that'll be his call if he's got three plays before the pre-snap read. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be different this year. We know that. So it'll just be interesting to see how good that is for us before Michigan State football.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important that a quarterback's a well-rounded position. It's not just about your arm. It's not just about accuracy. It's about how cool you are under pressure, how intelligent you are, how smart you are, all that, your football knowledge, so to speak. So that's all very important, and you really don't get to know that about a quarterback until you see them in game pressure. So we'll find out come August 31st.
That's for sure. And we're going to find out tomorrow, because Jack Ebling is going to be sitting in for me tomorrow. Jack Ebling will be here to talk sports with you right here on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. We want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and come back and join Jack Ebling tomorrow right here on WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a safe and a pleasant evening, and Jack will be back for you tomorrow. I'll be back on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.